This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy. Trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on Danny and Dusty on a Monday afternoon. We're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Monday. And finally, Dusty, we will talk Masters and Rory McIlroy winning in a playoff and securing his career Grand Slam. Definitely not without the drama.
It was a perfect day of sport for Augusta National and the Masters because you had everything that everybody was hoping for in that round. They got it with Rory melting down, but then still finding a way to win. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely everything. He's the first Masters winner to have four double bogeys in four rounds of golf. He had two in the final round and was able to still find a way to win that. Coming off the tee and going in the bunker and then double bogeying the opening hole. His two-shot lead gets evaporated. Second hole goes in the bunker off the tee again.
And missed both those shots by a half yard. He clears the lip of the bunker.
Unbelievable.
His opening drive goes probably 345 yards.
But it's in the bunker and he doubles. Mm-hmm. And then he gives up the lead to Bryson on two. And then he just kind of methodically fights his way back, stays near the top, then double bogeys again on the 13th hole.
And that's when you thought, oh no. It felt like at 13 after that double, the unraveling was going to happen.
But then 15 happens, and to have a signature shot of not just your round, that tournament, your Grand Slam, but probably his career on 15 with a big draw around the tree and then just nestling up to about 6 feet from the cup. Now, he missed that putt, but he still birdies 15, and you're going, that was insane, especially because it was right after Bryson dunks it in the water.
Yeah.
And you're going, so much could go wrong here, but he didn't. He ended up finding a way. And then on 18, he goes into that bunker on 18 and you're like, there's no freaking way this is going to happen to him. Goes to the playoff and beats Justin Rose. And to see his reaction afterwards, I mean, if you don't have any sort of feeling in you when you saw Rory drop to his knees and you saw how much that meant to him, you don't like sports because that was that was like a 5 billion pound gorilla jumping off his back.
Like we talked about this going to the Masters. I appreciate the Masters. I thoroughly enjoy it, but it is not on my bucket list of like, oh, I would have to go to this.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I said that, I also said, look, if you gave me Tiger in his prime, because he gave you those moments.
Yeah.
The unbelievable shots that we've seen Tiger hit there year after year after year throughout his career became like this thing that you just had to see. With Rory, unfortunately, it was him melting down.
Yep.
And when he got that double on 13, he got the double because he laid up. And it was just like, oh no, he's scared and he's unraveling, which is so counter to what we've seen from guys like Tiger and Jack and the guys that are just cutthroats. And that has been the knock on Rory, is that when he unravels, he tends to pull the reins back and get super tight. And then you see just it all. Bleh. To see him rebound from that, like you said, is that's what makes this tournament great, is those usually the closing two holes.
Yep. I don't know if we've seen quite that kind of drama. Like, there's been a lot of drama in tournaments, but with what was at stake for Rory, you know, like Tiger in 2019 made grown men cry.
Yes.
Because it was like his career was over. This was so different because it was, he finally did it.
It was redemptive.
He, in doing that, he became the first European to complete the career Grand Slam. He's the first guy in 50 years to do it. First Masters winner to make four double bogeys and still win the tournament. Second most career starts to ever win a Masters. 17 times he's played that course, and it is
crazy.
He's been on the margins every single time, and he's missed it. And he's the first European to reach five major wins since Nick Faldo in 1992. That is absolutely crazy. And he, by the way, it was the largest deficit to come back from to win a Masters. He was down seven strokes at one point and was able to come back and win. Not yesterday, obviously.
Over the tournament.
But over the tournament. And that, like, to see the drama unfold the way it did, because Rory was, everybody's like, oh boy, Rory is going to melt down. But it ended up, Bryson was the guy who just fell apart and the wheels fell off for him. And that was at the end of the tournament. But Justin Rose to knock down a 20-foot putt on 18 to be there waiting for him at the end, like, incredible drama. Now you have Justin Rose, who's lost two playoffs at the Masters in 2017 to Sergio Garcia. Mm-hmm. Now he loses this one. Now you have a completely different storyline of a guy who came out firing early and it was white-knuckling it to the end, found a way to force that playoff.
What a putt.
And ends up falling short. It had every single bit of drama, and then all the stories, like the way the broadcast kind of let everything play out with the story of his dad working 100 hours a week, his mom working a night shift just so they could give Rory kind of that life of golf. Mm-hmm. It was just like, gives you all the tingles. And then after he wins, Joe Pompliano did this on Twitter. So when Rory won and the putt fell, for 7 minutes, Jim Nantz and Trevor Immelman said 46 words. Look, they just let everything play out.
That's where Nantz shines. It's golf is where Nantz does his best work. He has the conversations, but he lets golf breathe. And it needs to. You need to have the applause. You need to have the caddy running over. You need to have the family hug.
And hearing all of those conversations.
Yes, like, and just letting what happens happen.
Yep.
Because in other sports, when you win titles, there's so much and there's so many people. With golf and tennis, boxing, individual sports, wrestling, it's about that person and that person's journey. It's not about the team. It's not about the coach. It's not about the owner. It's not about this, that. It is about that person, what they've endured and what they've completed.
It was really cool to see Rory kind of play out the way it did. And then afterwards, Bryson was asked about, you know, Rory being locked in.
Did you speak to him in there? How's he doing? Do you know?
No idea. Didn't talk to me once all day.
Did you try and initiate conversation with Rory at all?
He wouldn't talk to me.
The bad blood's still there between those two guys, and you could kind of feel that as they were walking up the course, too.
He also went on to say that he was just locked in. Bryson's going to be viewed as Bryson, but I thought he had some really good comments and didn't make it about himself or any of that stuff. He's like, look, I fell apart. And he goes, honestly, when Rory hit that shot, the double, he was like, I felt awful for him. And to be honest, it felt like something I would do.
Yeah.
And there was some self-awareness to him and his shortcomings. And I've come around on Bryson.
Yeah, I have too.
Whatever. I'm not sure there's ever been really a bigger, like, reverse heel turn.
Yeah, no, totally. And I really think he's, again, he's not perfect, but
he's way more engaging than Rory is at this point.
Oh, God, yes. And golf needs it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But, you know, congrats to Rory in completing that Grand Slam, because, boy, did it evade him for just so stinking. 2014 was one of the first chance he had.
Yeah.
So 11 years?
11 years. It took him 11 times the most for anybody to complete a Grand Slam. So after you get the other ones, to get that final one was 3 tries. His was 11.
Which is why you saw him kind of fall apart the way they did.
Yeah, man. And I'm happy for Rory. Big day for the TGL, too. TGL?
Yeah.
Huh? Playoff between 2 TGL legends.
Little bump up there for you.
Boston Commons, Rory McIlroy in Los Angeles.
There you go.
Golf Club's Justin Rose.
That's exactly the things you think about an associate.
That's what everybody was thinking, yeah, you know? 100%. If the Liv was going to get the bump, how about Liv falling apart?
Yeah.
With the exception of Patrick Reed, but he didn't have his soul, so who cares?
Yeah. And he slipped that putt by. Did you see the little, like, 5-footer he missed?
Yeah.
I was like, oof. That's got
to
hurt.
Happen to a better guy. Bad day for Ludvig Åberg.
Oh, man.
Triple bogey on 18.
That hurt.
Relatable golf. Right. And that was the thing about Rory's round is, like, I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've duffed one into a creek before. Nobody's above that. But Ludvig Åberg, that triple bogey, you know how much that cost him? Triple bogey?
I'm going to guess like $250,000.
$514,500.
You think a skins game is tough? Talk about a half milli going out on one hole.
Yeah, man.
One hole.
Yeah, that's brutal, dude. Ugh. That is brutal. That's a tough way to go. Ugh. That's a really tough way to go.
That sucks.
But it was really cool to see all the photos, and that's one thing Augusta does really well. I saw that there was a local golf pro. Like, he was just at the tournament. He got booted because he brought his cell phone out. The pictures of those guys teeing off, and everybody's just watching them golf. There's no phone in sight. It's awesome.
Pretty cool.
It is awesome to see that. Yeah. And then have you heard about the marker, that place?
Mm-mm.
So Augusta National, what they'll do is, like, the club champion, if an odd number of guys make the cut, then they have their club champ go out and play. Doesn't keep score. Just goes along the course. And for the last couple of years is this guy named Michael McDermott. Okay.
That's a golfy name.
Yeah. Well, he's a CEO of a financial services firm, a venture capital firm.
Mm.
And he ended up playing with Tom Kim on Saturday. And Tom Kim said, dude, the guy's just a baller. Like, he goes out and these guys just fire, like, they play Augusta regularly.
Yeah.
This guy is also a member at Pine Valley and Marion Country Clubs. Augusta National, Pine Valley, and Marion.
Must be nice.
Like, Pine Valley is one of the most exclusive clubs in like, even more so than Augusta.
Yeah.
It's one of the most exclusive clubs in America. This dude is filthy rich and a +3 handicap. That dude's living the dream.
I hope he's got terrible other things happening to him.
I bet he doesn't. I bet he doesn't.
If he did, he has a cure for him.
Yeah.
Because he has all the money.
And he looks very unassuming.
Good.
He's a tall, skinny guy.
I hope so.
Hits a ball like 300 plus.
Monster.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Some guys have it all.
Well, things aren't going so well for folks in the NBA. Black Monday is here upon us, and the first changes of the offseason are rolling out. We'll dive into that next here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The hiring and firing period of the NBA season is upon us as the regular season came to a close last night in the NBA. The first on the chopping block, Budenholzer, head coach or former head coach of the Phoenix Suns. To no one's surprise, he is out in Phoenix Also in New Orleans, general manager David Griffin is also out. There might be still a few more changes depending on what happens here in the playoffs and potential moves that can be made. But the Phoenix Suns have now fired three coaches in three straight seasons. Monty Williams, Frank Vogel, and Mike Budenholzer. Into the texter's point earlier about title-winning coaches.
Yikes.
Frank Vogel, Mike Budenholzer, both title-winning coaches that did not figure it out with the Phoenix Suns. And this is why I always fall back on the Jimmys and Joes and the relationships and the ability to communicate.
Relationships are the big one there, because I don't know what coach goes in with the three loaded contracts they have and can get through. Honestly, who could they get to come in?
Bradley Beal's just happy to be there. That's the story out of Phoenix.
With a no trade clause.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's like, well, they can't do anything to me. And that's the danger of that no trade
that
clause.
That is the worst type of person to give a no trade clause to.
Mm-hmm.
Because his complacency
to his agent,
is like, whatever.
Jeff Schwartz, I believe, is his agent. Great job. But he's just chilling. Look,
with that much money, you'd be happy anywhere, Bradley. Just go and get dealt to somebody who is the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't even know if there's any teams that are in that position that could take him on.
They are going to do everything they can to get rid of him. But he's also said, I hold all the cards. But so it's
that was an awful trade at the time. It's even worse now.
Yeah. And as it pertains to Phoenix, Chauncey Billups was a real option.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told by numerous people that Matt Ishbia, again, where did Matt Ishbia play college basketball?
Michigan State.
What fan did he grow up, or what team did he grow up a fan of?
Detroit Pistons.
Okay, draw the lines, man. Like, this is what I always talk about with ownership. It's new ownership does not solve everything. And like, oh, it's great to have Matt Ishbia spend all the money. It's also better to have a lot more foresight than what he has said over the last couple weeks, which is, I'm going to do everything every single year to try to win. And it's like, well, if you don't have the assets and you don't have the things that can actually get you there, you're putting yourself in a worse position literally every year.
Yeah, but he put him on the table by going out and getting KD right off the bat and trying to do something with Bradley Beal, but that was just an awful trade from the get-go.
Yeah.
And he wants it, though, and at least they know he wants it.
It's a good position to be in, to have an owner that cares and wants to win, because there are owners that don't care to win. And in the NBA, I don't think there's too many of those that don't care about winning. In Major League Baseball, there's a lot of them that don't care about winning.
Yeah.
In the NFL, I think even the bad owners care about winning.
Yeah.
Like, I think Tepper cares about winning with Carolina.
Yep.
Shad Khan with the Jaguars, I think he cares about winning. In the NBA, they've pretty much gotten rid of all of those. I really can't think of an owner. Reinsdorf?
I was just going to say the Chicago Bulls have that.
That's probably about it. I can't think of any other. Well, Benson and no, the new ownership does care about winning in Charlotte.
Washington.
No, Leonsis cares about winning there.
They don't really show it.
Well, I think they've been dumb in the actions they pursued, but Leonsis cares about winning. I mean, shows it on the NHL side.
Yeah.
I think Gail Benson in New Orleans is probably the other one where the Saints matter more than.
Yeah.
The Pelicans, which, again, the Pelicans just fired their general manager, David Griffin, and Joe Dumars is the favorite to replace him. And think about this for a second. Two phones, Joe. The Pelicans have a chance to have a top four pick in the NBA draft lottery, and the guy that they are about to hire might be the guy that drafted Darko Milicic.
Yikes.
Over Carmelo Anthony.
You know, the one franchise to keep an eye on in the how much do they really care and want to win is Clay Bennett in Oklahoma City, because every time somebody gets expensive, they ship him off.
Because he does not have the money.
They're going to have a lot of people that they're going to have to pay very soon.
In the next 3 years, that is the exact conversation that I had with an executive Saturday night.
That's going to be really tough for
everyone's
them to do.
Eyeing that because of how expensive these, like we talked about with Wemby. When he gets up at his super, super, super max, his 9-year going into his 10-year deal, that's going to be $100 million a year with the way things are going. How many, for those that don't know, Clay Bennett's net worth, I believe, is $600 or $650 million.
Hot dang.
how is he going to be able to afford? How are any of the owners who don't have billions upon billions going to be able to afford that? And that's a discussion for another day. But as we look around the NBA right now, you can argue about the Blazers bringing back Chauncey Billups, Joe Cronin. They have a path now, and they know who they're going forward with. The Phoenix Suns are still trying to figure it out. The New Orleans Pelicans are trying to figure it out. The Denver Nuggets are trying to figure it out. Like, you're looking at teams that the Pelicans were a team that a lot of people picked to go to the Western Conference Finals coming into this year. As insane as that is to say. If you go back and look at a lot of the predictions, New Orleans was picked anywhere between 1, 2, and 3. Because, like, oh, Zion might actually be healthy. Herb Jones is really turning into a dude. Trey Murphy III is really turning into a dude. Like, they're just kind of, like, going down the list of things that they did. DeJounte Murray. Like, they're like, this team looks like Brandon Ingram. Like, if you look at their roster and you take a step back and don't have the year that they just had in the back of your head, a lot of the projections were this team could do something.
Yeah, then every single one of those guys got hurt, whether it was Bruce Brown, Zion, Trey Murphy.
With bad injuries. I mean,
really bad injuries.
DeJounte not only broke his wrist, but also tore his Achilles.
Yeah.
Trey Murphy was a shoulder. Herb Jones, I believe, was also a shoulder. Like, you just kind of go down the list. You're like, ooh, these are bad things that have happened to your organization.
Yep.
So we'll keep track on these. It does sound like the leading candidate right now to replace Mike Budenholzer, New Orleans head coach Willie Green.
Oh, of course.
Willie Green has ties to James Jones, the general manager of the Suns and the Phoenix Suns.
Perfect.
So as the wheel turns, as it were, it's a lot. All right. The big news coming out of the weekend, besides Rory McIlroy, is the Blazers retaining Chauncey Billups, extending Joe Cronin, and what that means going forward. There was a lot more that came out of exit interviews about the grand scope of the organization. We'll get to that next here. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update. Coming out of the exit interviews for Chauncey Billups and Joe Cronin's extensions, Joe Cronin was asked about some higher level things. In particular, it started by being asked about Bert Cold and his role with the team.
Bert's great. We spend a lot of time, when I say we, you know, we do a thing which I think is really unique and very positive for, you know, what we're doing here. We call it a sync up, where it's myself, Chauncey, Dwayne, and Bert. Once a week, it's a big download on what's going on in our worlds that week. You know, what are we working on? What do we need help with? What's going well? What isn't? And Bert plays a great role in that, where he's, you know, he's moderator. He's asking us questions. He's helping us think in different ways. He's providing insight, you know, his decades of experience. So, you know, that's a microcosm of the role Bert plays overall, where he's active. He cares about this team. He cares about us. He wants to see us all succeed. And he's challenging us. Hey, have you thought about this? Hey, we need to do this better. You know, and it could be, you know, the topics are wide ranging, of course, big stuff like roster decisions. There's input there and there's collaboration. Hey, have you thought about this? You know, what about, what's this team saying? You know, there's definite, you know, back and forth with myself and Chauncey and him, and good positive feedback.
It's a lot of involvement. That's a lot of involvement. Mm-hmm. Weekly meeting with your GM, head coach,
and president of business operations.
President of business ops with Bert Cold, who, if you don't know who Bert is, Paul Allen's best friend, mm-hmm. And was his right-hand man in everything. And he has his hand in everything Portland Trailblazers related. Mm-hmm. It is a slippery slope, but it sounds, from what Joe Cronin is saying publicly, obviously, that he's letting them do the decisions, but just making sure that there is a plan in a direction of where they're going.
So
could be seen as meddling.
This is one of those things where, unless you're in the room, you just don't know.
Yeah.
And I definitely raise an eyebrow to it. It's something that I always consider. I asked somebody who has been in that room before in the past what that's like, and whether this is an iron fist situation or there's more back and forth. And in what I was told was he has his input, but if the argument is made and it's something that he can at least understand in the sense of, where that's coming from, he will defer, which is different from what I think everybody thinks Bert Cole is making every single decision. Because it, while Bert is involved in everything, he is not the one who signs off on everything. It's Jody Allen
mm-hmm.
that signs off on everything. So, again, you can only take what you want out of this, and it's definitely a Rorschach test of what you believe in or what you think is going on. And, you know, there's people all over the city that think one way or the other with it. I definitely think that Bert's got his hand in the cookie jar. I don't think it's full on running everything.
But it does give credence to the people that are worried that his fingerprints are all over every move that is made. And look, that's part of the gig when you sign up and you're going to be having those meetings. There's nothing that Joe Cronin said that would have been out of bounds right there. But if you have worries about his input and his hands being all over everything, it's there, man. And it was just told to you by the general manager of the team.
My only pushback to this, and it's not great in the sense of like, but yeah, and again, this isn't water carrying for the Blazers. Bert Cole was also the guy that was doing the same thing with Paul Allen when they were making transactions that fans did like.
Right. Okay.
And I saw some people get mad like, oh, so Joe feels like he has more experience than him, but that's a terrible place to be. And I'm like, well, he does. He's been involved with the organization for 35 years. Like that's
intimately
the whole deal. Like
yep.
When you would talk about them trading for Buck Williams, Bert was there. Like those same things and drafting Brandon Roy and on the flip side, drafting Greg Oden.
Yeah.
Like he was there informing all those decisions and being a part of that. So there all those things that come with it.
There's
also a step further. As Joe Cronin was also asked about Jody Allen and where things sit with that.
Our challenge is keep finding players, keep developing players.
No. Wrong one.
We don't talk about that. You know, Jody is incredible. Jody talks to us all the time about a lot of different things. That's her business. We don't meddle in that. We just stay locked in on, you know, the team and the staff and what we're building here.
Hey, all right. No conversations about that.
Yeah,
it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon, guys.
No. And the whole timeline thing and where that is. Look, even when I say Jody Allen's not the worst owner in sports, and that she's not the worst owner in the NBA, not by a long shot, I want it resolved.
Yeah.
If for nothing else, just so you have peace of mind going forward.
No doubt about it.
But
no doubt.
I have heard nothing that would indicate that is anywhere close to happening yet.
Okay.
So.
All right.
All right, coming up next.
Doesn't make us feel better.
We have the NBA playoffs locked in. Which is the spiciest play-in team coming out of that play-in bracket? We'll get to that as we wrap today's show here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan. We knew it was going to happen. Two teams in the Western Conference Finals were going to find themselves in the play-in that probably didn't expect themselves to be there. As the season came to a close yesterday or last night, the Golden State Warriors fall to the Los Angeles Clippers in overtime behind James Harden going absolutely bonkers, 39 points, 10 assists, and taking over an overtime period with 12 points, a steal, and a block.
Watch out. This Clippers team has won 8 in a row heading into the playoffs, and now they're a 5 seed, and they go to Denver to open this thing up. A Denver team that has fired their head coach.
A point guard's not healthy.
Back on the rails, though, with David Adelman, where they've won 3 in a row, and it's not going horribly for them, but you get a red hot team with a superstar who is back to playing the load that he needs to be playing in the playoffs in Kawhi Leonard. Watch out now.
And the Clippers also have Ivica Zubac, who is one of the few bigs in the league. Well, nobody can stop Jokic. You're comfortable single covering him and going, hey, we're going to live with what he gives you and we're going to try and take away everything else. And Kawhi Leonard is looking like Kawhi Leonard again. It's terrifying.
Yep.
But with that win, like you mentioned, the Clippers are out of the play-in. They sent the Golden State Warriors to a play-in game against the Memphis Grizzlies, who 2 weeks ago were in the 3 seed.
And now they are 8th. Golden State, if they win that game tomorrow, which I believe they will.
I believe they will, too. They will play the Houston Rockets.
The Rockets will be dogs with 52 wins this season.
It's insane. I get it that Houston all of the offensive struggles. Did you see what Amen Thompson did to Steph Curry last time they played?
Well, and you also have Jimmy Butler with a thigh contusion that he's working through.
Yeah, because Kawhi Leonard's tree trunk leg went right into Jimmy's thigh last night. I'll tell you what, Jimmy looked pretty damn good last night, but he definitely looked a little hobbled. And instead of getting a week off now, they got to play tomorrow.
Yeah, and here's the thing with Houston, though, is that they wrapped up the season with the Denver Nuggets, right? And that was like kind of the Ime Udoka test of, all right, how game are you for a desperate team in a desperate situation? It didn't go well.
Yeah, he played the starters in the first half. So I was talking to somebody in the Houston front office, so it was Friday, Thursday or Friday, about what the Rockets were going to do. And they're like, we're not sure yet. Do we want to rest guys? Do we want to tempt the basketball gods? Do we want to be playing our best basketball going in? And they kind of did both.
Yeah.
They rested some guys. They kind of like made sure guys were still moving and going out there. Basically, they said, okay, we're going to put you guys out in the first half, and then we'll see how things go. After the first quarter, it was kind of like, all right, pack it up. And it was, I think to your point, they wanted to see how things looked against the Nuggets, because if they go all in, they could knock the Nuggets down.
Yeah, especially after it went against the Lakers, where the Lakers mopped them.
Yes.
They played four playoff teams to wrap up the regular season. And they went 1-3. That one win, though, was against the Golden State Warriors, who needed a win there. I guess they played five in a row, and they beat the Thunder, who were resting guys. But they beat Golden State, lost to LA, both LA teams, the Clippers and the Lakers, and then lost to the Nuggets at the end.
I don't think the play-in games are going to have any juice, but the teams coming out of the play-in,
hells yeah,
could make it spicy.
All right, coming up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's prime time with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Monday, everybody. We'll see you on a sunny Tuesday from noon to three right here on The Fan.
Bye.